What's happening, everybody? You're now tuning in to the Producer's Corner with Spud Too Tight. And man, I got a hot show for you today. On the phone with me, I have a very prolific and talented jazz saxophonist, man, who's toured everywhere around the country, around the world, and has played with everybody big in the business, man. And he's truly a huge artist in my opinion, man. Please put your hands together and welcome Mr. Marion Meadows.
Hey, Spud, how you doing, buddy?
Oh, Marion, man, I'm doing great, man. Pleasure talking to you, man. You know, Marion,
my pleasure.
Dude, before we start and get into all the questions, I just got to take my hat off to you. Man, one of my favorite songs of all times is Sweet Grapes. The track man, it is the icing on the cake for all radio play, man. Seriously, when it hit the airways, man, immediately I would just gravitate to it, man. It's just a hot song, dude.
Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
And it's an E minor. So those are one of my favorite keys to play in. So, you know, I can really get it.
You have to be a sax player.
No, I'm a keyboard player, actually, man.
Oh, you're a keyboard player. Oh, yeah. Fabulous. Great, yeah. Bud.
Yeah,
great,
man. So, you know, how did you come up with that idea, man?
Well, you know, it was a song that I wrote with Michael Browning. For those who, you know, have my records and know my career in the last few years, I teamed up and paired with a gentleman out of Arizona who was a young, prolific writer himself and I thought was worthy of wearing producer shoes a while back. And I had talked him into, delving into that venture and that put that idea in his head. And before long, he and I were writing together with the idea of possibly putting a record out together. That was... early in my career at Heads Up, and I had come from RCA, and I was looking for a new writing partner, and found Michael Browning, and that's one of the labors of our love. Suede was after we had actually written quite a few songs together, and it was just a welcoming offer from two guys who just sat down and started writing songs. You know, we believed that a lot of the artists, you know, who were deemed smooth jazz artists. Unfortunately, the title was not living up to what people were expecting at radios. At some point, we felt that songs needed to come back to the format in terms of quality, and Suede was a result of that.
Wow, that's just a hot track, man. And everybody who's listening to the show, man, you definitely got to check it out, man. I mean, that's the go-to track, in my opinion, for listening pleasure.
Thanks, <sir. laughs>
you know,
Thanks, sir.
For a lot of people who don't know about you, Marion, I do. I'm a huge fan. For people that don't have a lot of background, how did you start as a jazz saxophonist, man, and, you know, venture off of what you're doing now?
Well, you know, I actually had been a sideman, once I had made the decision to choose music as a career, I thought at some point it would be something that I would want to be a leader at and have my own career at. In as much as I loved playing, behind a lot of the wonderful people that I got a chance to work with, I worked with Norman Connors and great singer Phyllis Hyman and.
Wow.
And many, many, many people that I in this business I had the opportunity to work with, that it opened up doors for me, but I was always itching to be my own artist, to spread my wings and make an offering in terms of what my voice and what I was trying to say. So it was kind of inevitable that I was going to do that. And then in the late 80s, as I was working, just really getting my feet wet, I decided to venture off and try my hand at being a solo artist, and it's worked out. it's been a fun ride.
Man, excellent. You know, give me some of your influences, Mir. I think, every good musician, every prolific musician had somebody that they've envisioned themselves not to be as, but kind of follow that path and that map, man. You know, who really laid that map out for you to... get into this.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, certainly I have had some wonderful influences via listening to all the greats, but hands-on musicians who actually had an influence on me were like Grover Washington, whom I knew, and he was certainly a mentor to me, And like many artists who play saxophone, I listen to, you know, John Coltrane. I'm more of a modern jazz player. I'm not known as a bebop player, but I love playing bebop.
Sure.
But I'm more of a modal style player and come from a more modern school. And contemporary player as well. So Grover Washington had a great influence on me. Some of the older artists like John Clemmer, I listened to. And then when you think of the obvious, you know, players, you know, of course, Sonny Stitt and Cannonball Adderley and many, many, many more. But I mean, I was a huge fan of like Sonny Rollins and even a lot of avant-garde players that I listened to growing up, Ornette Coleman, Eric Dolphy. I'm a bass clarinet player, but I started out on clarinet. So there were many artists who a lot of people may or may not know that I'm naming who were influences at a time when, musicians such as myself had a lot of choices, and we listened to a lot of music. And going through Berklee School of Music, I mean, you couldn't help it. It was all over the place.
Right.
It was everywhere, ringing in the halls. All these great artists, and you know, all the cats would, as we would say in jazz, the cats would be in their rooms comparing records and who they were listening to at the time. So that was our litmus test as to who we thought was going to eventually influence us and what we would learn to play like. But Grover had told me, don't play like me. Certainly you can be influenced like me, but don't get caught up in sounding like me. And I took his advice to try to search for my own sound, and I think it worked out.
Definitely. For me, I have a pretty good ear of listening to music, and I could definitely hear an artist and definitely find out who were they influenced from. Was it the older school generation or the newer school generation, or maybe a little bit of both, or maybe they have something of their own that they're bringing to the table that hasn't been brought to our attention yet,
Absolutely. You're
displaying it very well, Marion, and seriously, I want to talk bit about the production side a little bit. I know you have a writing partner, but do you have another set of team of writers that you guys go in the studio and kind of zone together? I mean, how are most of your team?
It certainly isn't just one collaboration that I do. I collaborate with many people. That Michael Brony and I just became like a team of writers here to kind of set a benchmark for the records that I recorded In Deep and Another Side of Midnight, stuff like that. But my band itself, we collaborate. The guys I've been playing with for 15 plus years are also producers. Writer Will Brock is Chip Sheeran, who's a producer and bass player in my band, also a writer. Will Brock, vocalist in my band, keyboard player, also a writer. And so I've got I just got a cornucopia of guys who I can call on.
Sure.
And also that influence comes through on the bandstand live. That spins off sometimes into recording something that we come up with when we're just messing around in sound check. So there's a lot of ways that by which we come by the music that ends up being on the records. And that's part of the fun of the process, is that you just never know where it's going to come from.
Definitely. Now, are these the same guys that perform with you on stage as well as playing at Rose Studio Musicians? These are the same musicians we hear on the CDs that we do on stage?
Indeed they are. Absolutely. Yes,
great.
They are. Happy to say.
Now, how do you guys usually start the process? I know it varies from artist to artist, but I just like to ask, because sometimes solo players, jazz saxophonists, vocalists, sometimes they like a bass or foundation to kind of write off of and just kind of build from there. Or do you like to start from scratch with a melody and have them build it?
Yeah, I do. I like the idea of a melody. But, oftentimes I have been moved by the groove, so to speak.
Right.
And I just, sometimes that moves me to want to to write a melody or come up with something that's going to complement that. Now, then that process starts in my head, but before I know it, I can be writing a song that maybe I'm not even going to record. I might pass it on to one of my colleagues or something.
Sure.
You know, it's just, but usually I get a melody in my head. I'm riding along in the car or something, you know, like Paul McCartney was saying, some of the best songs that he and John Lennon wrote were songs that they never recorded because they were riding in the car and didn't have one of those little micro recorders back in the day.
Right.
So, but yeah, it's, you know, that's, man, I mean, that really is part of the fun of what we do. It really is.
Now, how would you define your sound, your style? Pretty much all of your CDs, man, they have so many elements in it, from R&B, even a little hip-hop is on some of the rhythm sections and sounds that you use is really heavy. And I don't hear a lot of that in a lot of the smooth jazz community. Some of it's pretty straightforward and self-explanatory of what it is. But seriously, when I hear your track, man, I don't know if it's going to be an R&B song with the vocalist come on it. Man, and it's...
I tend to you know, come from that school of thought, which was influenced by, you know, like a lot of the funk bands of the day.
Yeah.
And I grew up listening to, and I say this in my show often, that I grew up listening to, you know, Grover Washington in, or John Coltrane, or even Duke Ellington, but across the hall, my sister would have, you know, some James Brown or some Aretha Franklin.
Sure.
Some Ohio Players and stuff, and couldn't help it. You know, we were going, you know, a lot of us, the Najees and the Gerald Albrights and the Kirk Lammons and stuff, you know, we grew up in a generation of a lot of great music, and that music was not just jazz, you know.
Right.
There were a lot of incredible artists, like, you know, who influenced all of us, and, you know, I mean, it goes on and on and on. That list, we could sit here and name for the whole hour.
So. Yeah, definitely. Right. Now, John Coltrane, man, he's a legend in himself. I mean, he's almost, to me, he's more of a brand, seriously, in jazz. I mean, it's...
Yeah,
a lot of these guys, man, they just, you know, they're the kings, man, and they are going to remain the kings. And everybody who's coming into, you got to pull from these guys. You have to go back. You know what I mean? I just feel that as a great musician, I just feel that you have to go back and pull from where it started from so you can build yourself a serious foundation as a musician. This helps your ear also, you know.
It does. It does. I agree.
You know, I want to ask you, Mary, everybody has a zone, I feel, that they're most creative. You know, it could be a blend of both on stage or in the studio. Where do you find yourself really centered and focused when you're composing or just freelancing and improvising on stage?
Well, I find it from reaching, you know, to staying in touch with a style of living that I had early in life. In my early 20s, I had, you know, kind of gone in search of a more spiritual meaning of what life was about in fellow mankind. And I thought that at some point I should never lose touch with that, that I had a passion for, you know, the survival of you know, of mankind based on being an artist and contributing to the well-being, so to speak. And I feel as though that musicians and artists, you know, have, there's a lifestyle that we have that contributes to the well-being of others. And at some point in your life, you have to be accountable for that and make it so that, you know, if you're fortunate enough to have a career and have fans, then you're accountable for what it is that you're trying to say. Now, it doesn't mean that you have to be all self-righteous or anything, and or in any way be censored by what you do. But for me, my personal choice is that I'm accountable, and as much as I'm moved by what the people feel that I do, then I hold myself accountable that I want to continue to spread that gospel, and that to, you know, be a part of someone who gives back, who has an influence on maybe the younger generation, and also spread some well-being towards them so that they can model their lives based on a healthy, rich, artistic, you know, influence. And therein lies the reason that I've always championed young kids getting involved with art and never ever letting society tell them what they should listen to or not write or read or, you know, watch, because, you know, we are art, and we are art every day, and we've gotten so far away from teaching children the history of it, the importance of it, and what it means in our lives, that we've gotten so greedy and so self-indulgent that we've lost the spiritual side. And art has always offered that. And so, you know, that's where I start from on a daily basis in what I do. Outside of that, my hobbies, you know, are things that I like to get out and do on my own, riding my bike and doing stuff like that. But, you know, when I do what I call my job, I take it seriously because it is the spirit of who I am.
No, I totally agree. You know, I find myself, you know, trying my best to help everybody I can. I feel that as a musician, composer, producer, engineer, if there's a tip that you can share with somebody, I mean, that's going to benefit them to really excel within their craft. I mean, I feel it's our job to enlighten and inspire one another, especially the young. I mean, I take my time out and mentor up-and-coming young producers and, you know, kind of steer them in the right direction of how to run their studio, the best way to compose, arrange. I can't give you talent, but we can develop what you have already. And, you know, and also it gives them another opportunity to see that, man, I have another side of music I can use as a career versus just focusing on selling CDs. I mean, there's so many different avenues you could take within the music industry and, you know, broadening your horizons and kind of just not focusing on just selling CDs gives you other opportunities to focus on also, you know. So, yeah, I definitely agree with you.
Yeah. Well, you know, and you hear what I'm saying, cause, and then you feel that as well, because you're obviously out there doing something that you love, not necessarily something that you have to do.
Right.
And, you know, and so at the beginning, at the end of the day, I never question, you know, what someone's beliefs are. It's just that whatever they believe in, hopefully it would be something that also is for the well-being of others around them, and that we're not just like trying to fool ourselves and you know, with trickery and greed.
Sure.
I think that's how we've gotten to be where we are today. And music took a backseat for a while as to being easily homogenized and copied and just set into a trend. And so therefore, for, you know, a couple of generations, you know, the kids got into, you know, not the best musical, no musical offering is bad, but when you start losing sight of how to really write a song and the, you know, the complexity of where a song can be, not that it should be, but, you know, let's not lose sight of the fact that great songwriters are great songwriters and great songs are great songs.
Exactly.
And there's no denying that. And so if you can't remember a melody, then it probably wasn't a great song.
Right. You know, I think a lot of, you know, I just hear a lot of times players and different musicians, I think scales is probably the biggest thing I've seen where people aren't really familiar with all of the scales and different progressions to use. And I was like, well, you know, you're playing, but it's sometimes you're running out of the scale of where I think the melody should go. Not saying that, you know, I'm downplaying you as a musician, but if you're going to stay within a scale, I mean, let's use it for what it is. I mean, it's there lined up for us to use. You can go outside of it, but make sure it's going to blend together so you can pull yourself back into it without, you know, getting the listener off focus and, you know, confused.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
You know, Mary, I've also noticed, man, how clean of recordings you have on your CDs, man. Your saxophones are coming through so clear, man. What mic and pre's are you using? What's the signal chain on that?
Well, we use Avalon, and you know we've used everything from little cheap studio projects to, you know, Telefunken, you know, $10,000 Telefunkens.
Sure.
I find that today a lot of microphones that you can buy on the market in the you know $300 to $1,500 range are some great microphones out there. You don't need any more $3,000 Neumann or $10,000 Telefunken or something.
Right.
There's a lot of great trees like the Avalons and stuff like that that are out there that with today's recording and today's technology in software has really championed that cause that, you know, you hear a lot of good, clean recording. And I mean, I love old analog recording, but today's mic trees and microphones have stepped up, that's for sure. And you hear it on the recordings. A lot of guys, you know, swear by, you know, the tube trees, as do I, because I think even you can, when you complement a nice tube pre with a microphone to that are not as expensive today, you come up with a good quality recording.
Right, I agree. Now, are you using DAW or are you using analog recording now?
No, it's digital recording. I do a lot of recording here at home, you know, via Pro Tools or Logic and stuff like that. But they've gotten that, those software programs are so good now. And, you know, I just, like I said, I record a nice into a nice warm mic pre and slam that bad boy into the Pro Tools. And hey, I can roll out and put on my bathrobe, or I can go in the studio with the whole band and get all dressed up. So, you know, whatever the choice might be that week.
Right. No, I agree. No, that sounds great. I'm a Logic Pro user.
Well, I
also
prefer being in the studio with the band. So.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Make the record straight. Well, man, what's on the plate for Mary, man? What's on the agenda now? What you got coming up?
Well, I do along with the band every year in New Haven on the Yale campus. There's a famous club called Toad's Place, of which Jeff Lorber wrote his famous song Toad's Place after this club. And I've been doing a holiday party, Christmas party there this is our 17th year we've been doing it. And I have another friend who raises money for kids in New Haven, Connecticut. This is a yearly annual thing. I do my show, he does his show, and a little something to give back to the hometown fans. This is where I came from, Connecticut, and, you know, and the community. So we raise money. We bring a nice holiday, set up the holiday cheer and get it going and get the blood flowing and get the inspiration out there. And we've been doing it for quite a few years now. I'm looking forward to that. It's coming up next week. So I'll leave Arizona and head out for Connecticut. I just got back from a week in D.C. at the Blues Alley. So we've got a very busy holiday season. And then after that, I'll head back to Hawaii because that's where my daughter is. And I spend a lot of time in Maui now. So I'm going to head there after New Year's, and I'll be down in Dallas. I think for New Year's night. So kind of busy. Going to be doing some plane hopping.
Hey, it sounds like it, man. Well, Marion, I appreciate you coming on the show and chopping it up with me, man. It's truly an honor to talk with you, brother. I do appreciate it.
But thanks for having me. All the best to you. I like what you do, and keep it up. Keep up the good work. We need guys like you. Thanks so much.
Appreciate it, man. Thank you.
Okay, Spud. Take care.
Bye-bye. All right, thanks. And a big shout out to Marion Meadows for coming on the show and chopping it up with me, man. Sharing his expertise and knowledge. You know, I say it over and over again, man, but it just never changes with me. You know, that experience from a veteran like Mary, man, who's been all over the world traveling, you know, displaying his art and craft to the masses. That's what it's all about at the end of the day, man. It's musical expression at his best. But before we go, man, I want to definitely play one of Marion's tracks, man, that he sent to me, man. It's off his most recent CD release, Secrets, and it's a bad jam, man. You definitely got to check it out, and I know you'll dig it, man. The title of the track is called Let the Top Down, so I'm going to let the track play out, and for those of you that like to get in contact with me, hit me up on my email, spudtootight@gmail.com. And for my past interviews and other shows I have aired, you can hit me up at my website, www.spudtootightmusic.ning.com. Until next time, you guys keep it tight. Peace. Mm-hmm.